I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Jonathan Greenblatt is here, head of the Anti-Defamation League. He has a new book whose title speaks for itself, called It Could Happen Here: How America is Tipping from Hate Toward the Unthinkable and How We Can Stop It. We'll also get his take on the Whoopi Goldberg comments about race and the Holocaust that got her suspended for 2 weeks from The View on ABC. Greenblatt went on The View with Whoopi Goldberg the following day for a dialogue on the topic. Jonathan Greenblatt grew up in the greater New York area, Trumbull, Connecticut, has been a social entrepreneur, starting the bottled water company Ethos Water, that gave a portion of the proceeds to water projects in the developing world. He served as President Obama's director of the Office of Social Innovation and Civic Participation and more before heading up the ADL. And Jonathan, thanks for coming on with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, thank you for having me on the show. I'm a big fan.
And let's begin on the news. Here's a little of what Whoopi Goldberg said originally on The View last week.
It's not about race.
It's about a different race.
But it's not about race. It's not about race.
What is it about?
Because it's about man's inhumanity to man. That's what it's about.
But it's about white supremacy.
But these are two
Romans.
White groups of people.
Well, how do we have to black
they
people?
They see them as white.
And
they but you're missing the point. The minute you turn it into race, it goes down this alley. Let's talk about it for what it is. It's how people treat each other.
So that was on The View, and here's a little of how she began to explain it. I think this was the following night after the backlash began. She talked to Stephen Colbert on The Late
Show
on CBS. Oh, same night, sorry.
Yes, same night.
As a black person, I think of race as being something that I can see. So I see you, and I know what race you are. And the discussion was about how I felt about that. I felt that it was really more about man's inhumanity to man and how horrible people can be to people. And we're seeing it manifest itself these days. But people were very angry and they said, no, we are a race. And I understand.
Whoopi Goldberg on Colbert. So Jonathan, you and Whoopi were on The View together. I guess that was the next day. I think I've got my days a little messed up here. But what's your basic take?
Well, look, the Holocaust was about a kind of racialized anti-Semitism that led to the systematic annihilation of European Jewry. I mean, literally, the Nazis saw themselves as the Aryan master race, and again and again and again framed the Jewish people as a subhuman race. What we need to keep in mind is that race is a social construct, and it varies in time and place and sociopolitical context. So for Whoopi Goldberg, who was thinking about race in the context of America 2022 and looking at it purely as an issue of black and white, she couldn't see the link, but because she was very ill-informed. Because, you know, Jews, like my grandfather, who was a Jew from Germany, his entire family was slaughtered by the Nazis because they saw him as a different race. And what I'll acknowledge is that, you know, the Jewish people were complicated. We are a religion. We are an ethnic group. We have our own language, our own customs, our own rituals, our own culture that has persisted and persevered for thousands of years in diaspora. And so, again, if you try to fit the, if you will, the hexagonal Jewish people into the, you know, like a round peg into a square hole, mm-hmm. concept, Brian, the hexagonal Jewish people into the square hole of race in America, it doesn't fit very neatly. The other thing I would just say, Brian, is her comment that this is white on white. I mean, this notion that Jews are all white is also simply wrong. We are a multi-ethnic, multiracial community. There are Jews of all hues, if you will. And while many of us present as white, many of us do not. And so I think there was also a myth there. And even if we were presenting as white, if we see what happens in this city, in Brooklyn, every single day, we see Jewish people who are visibly Orthodox and observant being harassed, being assaulted. We're dealing with a case right now that happened this past weekend So again and again, the Jews are targeted because of how we look, because of where we're from, because of what we believe. And, you know, that kind of anti-Semitism just needs to be called out. Yeah. Whether she was intending to be malevolent or not, the ignorance is still the same.
Can both things be true in a way that Nazism and the Holocaust were about white supremacy, and Hitler saw the Jewish people as a different race from himself, but in the context of the United States, where there is obviously anti-Semitism, but Jews, for the most part, have the same white privilege. I think about 85% of Jews are what would be considered white typically in this country, and have the same white privilege as other white Americans compared to black Americans.
Look, as the British writer David Baddiel has says, you know, for the extreme right, we're not white, and for the far left, I mean, we're not white enough for the extreme right, and then for the far left, we're too white. But to be really honest, the Nazi death machine was about Aryan supremacy. It was about the notion that the Germanic people were superior to Slavs and to Russians, and certainly to Jews and to Roma and to other ethnic groups. So even describing that as quote unquote white supremacy, like the way we think about it today, Brian, I don't think works. Mm-hmm. But again, to bring it back to today, I mean, my own wife is a Jewish woman from Iran. She's dark complexioned. I mean, she doesn't look white. So I just think trying to fit the Jewish experience into this current convention is not helpful. And anti-Semitism is at the beating heart of right-wing white supremacy. It is core to their ideology. It is central to their malevolence. The idea that there's a Jewish cabal trying to subvert the quote-unquote white race. So, you know, I think we just need to recognize that anti-Semitism takes many forms. And, you know, whether it was the anti-Semitism that we saw in this city last May when Jews were getting beaten up in broad daylight, that wasn't white supremacy. Those people were coming from anti-Israel rallies. The anti-Semitism that Jews are facing in Brooklyn today, that isn't white supremacy. That's Orthodox Jews being beat up by local, often teenagers or adults who often are people of color. And so anti-Semitism can't be put in one box. It is just too complicated, and it comes from all sides.
Jordy in Lower Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jordy.
Hi. Perfect. I'm so glad you put the question that way, because that's exactly what I wanted to address. I am Jewish. I was not offended at all by what Whoopi Goldberg said. And I, from my youth and my parents, was taught that my Jewishness was a religion. And I understand that it's more complicated in some regards, because we are also a culture and can be ethnic groups. And we do have a long-lasting culture, as Jonathan Greenblatt said. But I was taught and do hold to this day that I'm a religion. On the census, I check white. I know Jews come in every color. So are we of two races? Are we Jewish race and whatever color we are, race? It doesn't make sense. I refuse to accept that Hitler defined me as a race. I refuse that. I reject that idea. And I, as far as I'm concerned, I'm white. Whoopi Goldberg made a very valid point. It is about inhumanity of one group to another group, and it continues today with many other groups.
Right.
And I just don't see the value or the importance of calling us a race. I think it's going to make things worse.
Jordy, thank you. Jonathan?
I mean, look, Jordy, I hear you. If you open up the book Mouse, that was the jumping off point for her comments, the first page of the book is a quote from Hitler that literally says, the Jewish people are absolutely a race. They are just not a human race. Okay, so whether, and to your point, Jordy, racism doesn't make sense, nor does racialism make sense. But the reality is that the Nazis defined us a certain way and literally obliterated the Jewish people of Europe in the kind of Holocaust that was perpetrated across countries, across continents. Never before had one single group been exterminated that way. So look, the race card that Hitler used can't be denied. Now, you might not see yourself that way, and frankly, I don't see myself that way, because Jews do show up in all shapes and sizes. You can convert into Judaism. You can choose not to be Jewish. But whether or not you choose to go to synagogue every week, Jordy, you know, I know lots of Jews who don't do that. Most still say, but I'm culturally Jewish, or my grandparents were Jewish. So I think that's just where we are, like it or not. And with respect to Whoopi, can I just say something, Brian?
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the Jewish value of teshuvah, or repentance. We all make mistakes. I have made plenty. All of us do. And so she apologized. So I accepted her apology, because I think it's important to recognize when people make an error and just say, hey, I got it wrong. There's nothing wrong with embracing them when they do that.
And Whoopi Goldberg is not the problem. I think everybody would agree, right? I mean, she's coming from a place of good faith. There are malevolent anti-Semites out there,
correct,
plenty of them. Whoopi Goldberg, her whole history, and even the way she approached this issue, is she's not the problem, right?
Yes, I mean, the way she approached the issue, to your point, came from a kind of ignorance, or I think a narrowness in how she saw it, and yet she immediately pivoted. And it enabled the kind of, look, by inviting me on the show, Whoopi opened up a national conversation that needed to happen. And so I credit her for that, and I credit her for being willing to acknowledge her mistake and move on.
Let's go on to your book. And again, this ominous title is It Could Happen Here, How America is Tipping from Hate Toward the Unthinkable and How We Can Stop It. It Could Happen Here is a historical literary reference, right?
Correct. I was making an allusion to Sinclair Lewis's book from the 1930s when he wrote something like a satire about what was happening in Europe and the notion that it could actually happen here in America as well. People thought back then that America was entirely different than Europe, that you could never see the rise of a strong man like Hitler. But the reality is, you know, his book was written before the emergence of Charles Lindbergh, who was an avid anti-Semite and a national hero, and was someone that many people thought was going to, you know, run for elected office. And the reality is, you know, the Philip Roth book, The Plot Against America, is about a potential Lindbergh presidency. So I wrote the book using that title in mind, but also because, Brian, as I was alluding to a few minutes ago, my Jewish grandfather from Germany, the country he was born, the only country he ever knew, could have never imagined as a young man before the rise of the Third Reich and the Nazi death machine that the country would turn on him, regard him as an enemy of the state, destroy everything that he ever loved, and murder almost his entire family and friends, and force him to flee to this country as a refugee. When he was a young man, he never could have guessed he'd have a grandson in America. That would be me or my sibling or my cousins. And then my father-in-law was born Jewish in Iran, the only country that he and his family ever knew, and never could have imagined before the Islamic Revolution and the rise of the Khomeini kind of death cult that they would turn him into an enemy of the state, that they would destroy everything that he ever loved and force him and his family, including my future wife, to flee and come to this country as refugees. And when he was a young man, he never could have guessed that his grandchildren would one day be born in America. Those are my kids and my nieces and nephews. So, Brian, I don't think, knowing my own family's history, that I can take for granted that my grandchildren will be born in this country unless we really fight for what we have, because it could happen here. The conditions could change. Democracy is not is not ordained by natural law. And the pluralism that has given Jews and so many others so much privilege and so many rights is not, you know, some foregone conclusion. If we want it, we've got to work for it to keep it. And I really believe that.
You know, many people might say, yes, we have plenty of anti-Semitism in the U.S., plenty of racism in the U.S. and other forms of hate in this country, but not the conditions or even the large majority demographics of one group anymore, like, say, Germany in the 40s, to impose anything like a Holocaust. Do you disagree?
Well, I would tell you this, you know, when the ADL was founded in 1913, you know, we're the oldest anti-hate group in America. When we were founded, Jews in this country literally lived with more uncertainty than Jews in Germany. In this country, Jews couldn't buy homes in many places. Quotas kept us out of universities. Discriminatory practices kept us out of medical institutions. You know, the reason why we have all these hospitals named Beth Israel, Cedar Sinai, etc., is because Jews had to found their own healthcare institutions. This is the reality. So Jews in Germany lived with more certainty, with more security than Jews in this country when we were created. So I just think, I interviewed in my book Barbara Walter, who's a professor, who just wrote her own book called How Civil Wars Start, who talked with me about the fact that the conditions are ripe in this country for literally civil war in a way they haven't been in well over 100 years. And I interviewed Greg Stanton, who is a former professor from George Mason University for this book. He runs the Genocide, it's called the Genocide Watch Network. And his organization monitors countries for genocide. And he says a number of the determinants seem to be in place in this country in ways they've never been before. So at a time when democracy seems to be failing, when institutions seem to be buckling, when the norms seem to be changing every single day, I do worry. And does it mean that there's going to be a wholesale slaughter of the Jewish people? I'm not saying that. But I think a social unraveling, civil unrest, I think these things could be imminent realities if we don't engage and do so quickly.
Trump and much of the Christian right in this country position themselves as the strongest defenders of Israel, mostly the Netanyahu, if you will, conservative political branch in that country, and have, you know, adopted the phrase Judeo-Christian, I think largely to separate themselves from Muslims and from people of color. I've even heard commentators say Trump wasn't such a booster of Netanyahu to get Jewish support. He wasn't going to get much of that anyway. He did it to mobilize conservative Christian support. So how much do you agree with that at all? And when you talk about the unthinkable, as you put it, possibly happening in the United States, is it not possible that Jews would be considered the in-group with the majority who is most likely to perpetrate that unthinkable?
Okay, so to unpack all of this, I mean, I think number one, the term Judeo-Christian is a sociological term that was coined, I think, in the 1940s or 1950s. So it far predates the society as we know it today, and it's not necessarily intended to be exclusionary of other groups, but rather just speaks to the consonance between these two faiths and many of the shared values between them. I think number two, as it relates to President Trump, I mean, the reality is that he was a very complicated person in many respects. While, as I've already said on the show, I mean, he was indeed playing footsie, if you will, with some of the worst offenders from literally in his first interview with Jake Tapper, suggesting that he didn't know who David Duke was in early 2016, which was preposterous.
Well, it was also a lie because he had spoken about David Duke and denounced him years earlier.
Yeah. I mean, it was a flat out lie to his campaign credentialing white supremacist media for their events, to going on the Alex Jones show, to the Jewish Star tweet against Hillary Clinton, to the America First slogan, which was Lindbergh's slogan, to that last campaign ad with Soros and Lloyd Blankfein. I mean, the whole thing. And yet at the same time, let's recognize he has a Jewish son-in-law and his daughter converted to Judaism. He had Jewish grandchildren in the residence of the White House. I mean, literally, there had never been a president with as personal a relationship with the Jewish people as Donald Trump, literally, since the country was founded. And yet he played, again, he enabled and emboldened these extremists and the anti-Semites. That contradiction is a reality. And so we need to recognize that while there's much I criticize, that also doesn't mean he didn't do some things that I agreed with over the course of 4 years. And I recognize those things because, like life, Brian, oftentimes it's not just black or white. It's a bit nuanced. And there's always shades of gray. Tucker Carlson, as the last caller suggested, we have called him out again and again and again and again because his invocation of anti-Semitic tropes is deeply problematic. Now, he can claim support for the state of Israel, as might other political figures on both sides of the aisle, mainly on the GOP side in this narrow respect, but that doesn't necessarily take them off the hook when they engage in hate. So in terms of who claims to be more supportive of the state of Israel or what's the political strategy of one part or the other, I can't really speak to that. But I can speak to the fact that whether you demonize or delegitimize the Jewish people or the Jewish state, I find all of it very problematic. And that's why we call it out at the ADL without respect. I mean, I don't think either political party, Brian, has a monopoly on morality. You can find intolerance on either side of the ideological spectrum. And so I think at the ADL, our job here is to call balls and strikes and, you know, call out hate when it happens.
Right. The conversation that we're not going to have time to go deeper in, that have some people objecting to some of the things you're saying even here, is that some groups have much more power than others to enforce their hate, whether it's against Jews or anyone else.
I wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post last fall, and I would describe it as follows. I think anti-Semitism from the right is like a bomb cyclone. If you look back at extremist-related murders over the last 25 years, the overwhelming majority were committed by people we would call far-right extremists, white supremacists, armed militia enthusiasts, sovereign citizens, accelerationists, and so on and so forth. And you can go from Charlottesville to Pittsburgh to El Paso to Capitol Hill, and you can see the catastrophic impact these people can have. So anti-Semitism from the far right is like a violent hurricane that will kill you in your tracks. The anti-Semitism from the far left, I would liken to climate change. It's changing slowly, but surely, and yet measurably. And people don't pay as much attention to it, might actually deny it, but it is absolutely real. And it creates the conditions in which, again, as we saw last May, Jews are getting beaten up in broad daylight in Times Square. Jews are getting beaten up in broad daylight in the Diamond District. Jews are getting attacked all over the country, and none of the assailants are wearing MAGA hats. So I hear the point about the power dynamics. And when you had someone in the Oval Office, the commander-in-chief of our armed forces, who told the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by, that was a terrifying moment, and it was real. But that doesn't mitigate and change the fact that you could have anti-Semitism coming from other people on the political spectrum. That simply is a statement of fact. It's not to say that there's an equivalence between the two.
Jonathan Greenblatt, head of the Anti-Defamation League. His new book is called It Could Happen Here, How America is Tipping from Hate Toward the Unthinkable and How We Can Stop It. Thank you so much for coming on with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Brian, I'm a big fan of the show. Thank you for having me. I hope I can come back soon.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.